Okay. As we're going to start with our icebreaker that's on the thing, just to get us off square one. We're in the story of David and Goliath. I don't know, it's too many, you know, giants walking up and down the streets defying God and throwing spears at us and saying he's going to cut our head off, but this story has so many principles that can apply to our lives. But just think, what would be some of the, quote, giants that we face in the modern day? What's some of the really big things that
federal government?
That's a pretty big giant. Yes, yes, and it seems in many ways some troubling times. Yes. What else? Other giants.
Iran.
Yeah. And you could probably expand that to the whole geopolitical world. I mean, there's flashing terrorism, you know, and, you know, 10 years ago, we worried about terrorists sneaking into the country, and now we wonder, you know, who's going to be radicalized next door and go shoot up someplace. You know, this is a world we didn't live in 20 years ago. It really isn't. What are some other giants?
The devil.
The devil. Just put him, let's go right to the top. Yeah, right to the top. Absolutely. And, you know, the Bible clearly says he's like a roaring lion. I mean, you know, we talked a little bit about lions in our Psalm 57, you know, but he's like that roaring lion. Yeah. What else? Anything other?
You pick the day of the week, there's a new giant.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this thing with Planned Parenthood, I mean, that is just revolting.
It just makes your skin crawl, I mean, let alone be,
you know, 40 years
offended.
Ago, Roe v. Wade, maybe they didn't know better, but now science proves these are kids and they're, you know, the government's harvesting the kids. Well, I mean, that's just horrid. It's just disgusting.
It's on every level. Our level. Yeah, giant. Some others? I want to add one. And this is not a comment on my body type or size, but sometimes it's me that's the giant. It's my own tendencies and the struggle to try to overcome and grow and be what God wants me to be. I mean, we all face temptation. We all are still in the flesh. Sometimes it's right here.
And we can't blame it on the devil either.
No, you can't. He just takes advantage of
your own flesh.
He takes it.
Own weakness.
Yeah.
Pride. Yeah.
Pride. Oh.
Lack of discipline.
I will tie, you know, we can tie that one to the last one. Because, I mean, it really, at the core of so many things that go wrong in our life and heart, we think we know, we think we're whatever, we think we're better, all the better. Yeah, now I'm getting a little uneasy with this list. But here's, now just take that list with all of its unease, and let's just now apply that to the story. And let me just give you the upfront, and then we're going to kind of work our way through this together. There's no secret reveal later on. But there's something about this story. In fact, it was interesting. I was reading in 2 Thessalonians 2 this morning for devotions, and I don't get into that because I'll get on a rabbit trail. But to what the passage was saying is God's working mightily, but at the same time, there's responsibility. He talks about we need to preach the gospel. Well, you know, the gospel is God's message. It's Christ's work. It's how he saves people. But we are responsible to take action to announce the gospel. That's why it says at the top of the list, both and. That somehow, and how this works, I can't explain. It's a mystery. But how the God who is in control, the God who is over all, at the same time he uses human activity to do what he's doing is a marvelous thing. And let me just throw two words into our thinking, and then we'll start dissecting this passage. We sometimes get on these two extremes. That's why I'm going to talk about the both and. Sometimes we are just totally passive. Okay, Lord, I need you to do something here. Waiting for you to step in. I'm trying to trust you. And we just sit frozen, trying to live by faith. The other extreme is our impulsiveness. oh, got a problem, here's what we do. And we just jump without praying, without thinking, without making sure our hearts are right, not without a real dependency on the Lord. So the one is just impulsiveness, just jump ahead. The other is just total passiveness. I'm not going to do anything. But in this story of David and Goliath, go to verse 47, just to give you a little heads up, and then we'll look at it together. This, I think, is one of the key things. This is David talking to Goliath. I'm just going to pick out the middle part of the verse. The Lord does not save with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's. Okay, there's the dependency on God. Okay, and go back to verse 40. Then he took his staff in his hand, and he chose for himself five smooth stones from the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag in a pouch which he had, and a sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. There you have his responsibility and his actions. It wasn't, well, the battle's the Lord, hope it works out. It wasn't, this is grab the rocks and go forward. He had the rocks in one hand, or in his bag, had the sling in his hand, I guess, to be accurate. But at the same time, he says, this battle belongs to the Lord. It's that combination of he responsibly acts, but at the same time he totally trusts. Okay, y'all kind of know where we're going here. Okay, we're gonna make a list together, and I don't know if you have a pen. We might have a few, or you can do it mentally, whatever. But we're gonna go through these verses. We're first of all gonna look at David's actions. And then we're going to look at David's beliefs that he expresses when he's talking to Goliath. And we just want to do this to kind of see the both in the end, all right? So we'll pick it up in, I'm going to read verse 37. That's where we left off, okay? Moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. And I think we talked about this. I wonder how much real confidence Saul had. You know, here's this kid that does, you know, and that guy is Mr. Robo Warrior out there. And, well, the Lord go with you.
He was a human sacrifice.
Yeah, maybe so. No one else getting out there. We'll just, you know. But anyway, in verse 39, this is the first 38. So Saul clothed David with his armor, and he put a bronze helmet on his head. He also clothed him with a coat of mail. That was nice of Saul for his human sacrifice. We're going to get you all dressed up and give you all the safety gear we can. And David fastened his sword to his armor, and he tried to walk, for he had not tested them. And David said to Saul, I cannot walk with these, for I have not tested them. So David took them off. Okay, so let's just identify the actions involved here and whatever commentary we want to make on them as we go. It's where they have little links together. So it was sort of like a metal fabric.
Shining armor for knights.
Yeah, but it wasn't like a solid breastplate.
It was a mesh.
Yeah, like a mesh.
Like,
yeah,
like a chain.
Yeah,
so you couldn't get a sword.
Right.
Yeah, it wouldn't penetrate a sword, but it would be flexible. It'd be heavy. It had to be heavy if it's going to stop a sword blow. So yeah. It may not. You know, now we interpret it as chain mail like medieval times. exactly what it actually looked like in their time, I'm not sure, but it was some sort of armor. Yeah. So his actions.
He was preparing David for a mortal combat or a carnal battle.
Mm-hmm.
Where David said, this battle's the Lord's.
Yeah, good observation, Eric. And remember, we talked a little bit about this with Saul. If you talk about the passive or the impulsive, which side are you going to put Saul on here?
Impulsive.
Yeah. Well, you're going out to battle, get dressed, do it the right way, do it the way, the normal way.
You've got to give Saul some credit. He probably had the best armor of anyone in the army. And like you said, he probably wasn't sure how
this was going to
come
out.
Back. Might have come back all torn up.
Yeah. In some ways he honors David. He honors David. He could just say, you're on your own, pal. Good luck. Let me know how it turns out. I'm gonna be in the tent, third to the left back there. You tell me how it turns out. And there probably was some sort of human compassion in it. But again, I think we could clearly say that Saul was not trusting the Lord. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been sitting around paralyzed in fear all these days. And frankly, now think about this. It really was Saul's responsibility as the leader, the representative, the chosen representative of God, if in that sense, as king, not priest, but chosen by God for this role. He should have been the one leading the people in confidence and faith. There was a real lack of spiritual leadership on his part. What else? What are the actions you gather from this?
Saul is not only dependent upon David for his sanity, but for the security of his realm.
Mm. You've been doing a little studying, haven't you? Hmm. You know, a little study. Because remember, you can check this out in the context, but Saul would play the harp to soothe Saul when he had his spells, I guess you'd say, his whatever, however you want to characterize it.
Madness.
Yeah, yeah. Anything about his action? Do you find it interesting that David actually tried it? I mean, he tried, he put it on.
It's probably too heavy.
Well, I'm sure, yeah, and he was a young man.
We don't know exactly how old he was, but in one of my commentaries I've studied.
You've been studying ahead too. Yeah, oh, yeah. That's good. Go ahead.
The Jew, then, he was back taking care of the livestock.
Yeah.
He was a young fella, and according to what I can understand in Jewish law, that you had to be a certain age before you could go join the army. So,
yeah.
David may have been less than 18 years old.
Yeah, so he was under that limit.
Yeah, so the armor they put on him, I would have liked to seen that. It couldn't have fit him. He couldn't have walked. No, they said I can't do nothing with it.
Yeah.
So
sometimes when we face a crisis, we start to solve it the way the world tells us to, and once you do it, it doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where David is.
That's a great observation, Bill.
He was going to do it the way the world did it.
He was going to do it the way the world did it, but it didn't feel right, so he backs up. Well, if that's the case, I mean, I know you're making a spiritual application here from this physical activity, but, you know, when he felt it wasn't right, he took a step back. Sometimes human pride, you're back to what you mentioned about pride, sometimes pride, you know, I know there was a study done, this was back in the 60s, about fighter pilots who were fatalities. And one of the conclusions was many of them, their pride would not admit that this is an unescapable situation and I need to bail out or eject. They were so prideful, they believed they could solve the problem and save the plane until they drove it into the ground.
I don't think there was any doubt in the confidence level that they had going into that battle.
Yeah.
And that he didn't feel like he needed any extra armor mm-hmm. or anything to do what he knew God was wanting.
He didn't have that extra armor when he killed
the
bear.
He was trusting God to take care of the battle. He wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't about him.
Yeah.
It was about.
I think you're correct. I think it really says something about his focus, his faith.
Plus, when the king tells you to put on dryness,
you do it.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah. But it's not me.
There's a certain amount of respect that I will. You know what you say. And it sounds like he respectfully declined to wear it. He explains why. You know, so okay, very good.
Well, as far as the rules cut is concerned, what David did was not very smart. As far as the world is concerned,
yeah,
take off the
armor. I mean, because now think about this. He could have said, "Could I get this? Could I get one size smaller?" I mean, you know, this or whatever. But yeah, very good. Okay, let's move ahead. Good observation.
Missionaries, what times, where they go, and what they do doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
From a worldly perspective, this whole thing is suicide.
Yeah. Suicide more, mission.
Yeah, it's suicide.
Yeah. So let's pick it up in that next verse is not 39. That is not correct. Yeah, I don't know why I have 46 there. It should be 39. I think.
Mm-hmm. Let's 39.
See. Oh no, it should be verse 40. I'm sorry. I don't skip that one. Go to 48. All right. Then he took his staff in his hand. That's just what every shepherd carried around. That is not exactly a technologically superior weapon, okay? He's got a stick. And he chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook. Can you imagine what Saul must have been thinking? I'm going to get rid of this armor. And what is he doing? He's down there picking out rocks, okay? That's what he's doing. put them in his shepherd's bag, in a pouch, which he had, and a sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistines. Describe his actions now.
Well, he had used those as bullets against lions and bears, so he knew what they could do.
Yeah. And again, this, you remember the faith in God, but action, you know? I mean, he knew what he had done before, what he'd seen God do. There's nothing wrong with some strategy and thoughts. He was planning to use the stones and the sling against Goliath. I mean, that was what he was going to do. So it's not, it's this balance between activity and faith. You know, just, and sometimes I think we have this strange view of faith that it means we check our brain at the door and we don't have to think, we don't have to plan, but then immediately got to rush back over and saying it's not just human strategy and human plans and human activity that leads you to spiritual victory. It is both and.
You do as far as faith, you just walked out there with nothing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, God, I'm ready. Okay, lightning bolt, that's what I'm in for. Or hailstone from heaven. Yeah. Or open the earth up and swallow. By the way, God has used all those mm-hmm. methods and we're like close to them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just both in. Anything else?
The number five.
Yeah.
What significance do you draw to that?
I don't draw any. There might be some, but I don't have any idea.
That's what I was going to ask, Gary. Why did he pick up five? Sort them out.
Maybe if you missed on shot one, you had some backup. I don't know. It might have just been a practicality.
In prophecy language, five is the number of learning.
Oh.
Five books of the Pentateuch.
Okay. That's a new one on me. I never heard that before. So.
I'll buy that.
Yeah, there might
this
be some.
This is an example. Go to my five brothers and warn them.
Okay.
And Jesus says they will not listen.
You've been studying too. You guys are loaded today. This is good. This is really good.
We're giving it out of different books, though. They're not out of the same book.
Well, that's okay. That's variety is good. Yeah. It could be just, I don't want to take away anything from the spiritual thing, but it could just be that's how many the bag could hold. You know, it could be something. I'm gonna put all the ammo of my magazine holder.
It is interesting that the numbers mentioned.
Though. It doesn't. Yeah.
Wouldn't have to.
He could just say he grabbed some rocks.
Well, I ran into this before in a different Bible study.
Oh, okay.
That's
all right. Okay.
That's how.
What does five mean again?
Teaching or learning. And this is one of the examples that they use.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. That's never come across my screen. There's a lot of things that haven't come across my screen and it needs to come across my screen. Okay, anything else from verse 40? At least the first part? How about the last part? Okay. Put them in the bag, pouch in his hand, sling in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. I mean, that's the key moment, isn't it? You can do all the armor trying and all the rock gathering and all the sling. I don't know what you do the sling. Put it in your hand. But you gotta step onto the battlefield. And here's a whole army here. Here's Saul here. They're all lined up, and he takes one step forward and another and another. You just wonder what would have been in the minds of those people watching this.
This is,
and I mean, and you can just see. I mean, talk about the contrast.
Yeah,
it's probably how they were looking. He's got his hand over his eyes, looking through the slits in his finger there. Yeah, but what? Let's talk about that for a moment. That step or that action. Again, we're on the action thing here,
mm-hmm.
or the both in the hand.
Again, I think he did it with confidence.
I'm sorry?
He did it with confidence.
I have absolutely have confidence that is true. I think so.
And then on the other side, there was probably some doubt about what was going on.
I think there was some bewilderment. Like, what in the world is this?
What's married this boy?
Who are they sending him out? And of course, Goliath goes into ridicule mode. I wasn't going to spend much time on Goliath's taunts, but since we're there, we'll say now we usually overlook 41. Okay, so the Philistine came and began drawing near to David, and the man who bore the shield went before him. Okay, I assume the shield bearer belonged to the Philistine. So there was another person on the battlefield. I mean, so in some ways, it's two against one, right? Whereas Goliath probably counted for about 8, so maybe it's about, might be 10-1 as far as the odds. Verse 42, and when the Philistine looked and about and saw David, he disdained him. Where he was but a youth, ruddy and good looking. That's an interesting,
yeah,
interesting description. Ruddy is usually a word that means reddish, a reference to the color of his hair or complexion. It was regarded in as beautiful in areas where hair and complexion were usually dark. So dark skin and dark hair. So someone that was, you know, maybe they were freckled or, you know, the red-haired people often are. So there's something, he stood out a little bit. Okay. Even though he was ruddy and good-looking, the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you should come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. I'm glad it's probably a good thing that the author didn't record at all. It probably was a little derogatory, offensive, obscene. The Philistine said to David, come to me and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. In their culture, one of the great insults would be for a body not to be buried. You know, if you love someone, respected someone, you give them a decent burial. So I'm going to feed your carcass. You're going to be dog meat. You're going to be
buzzard food.
Buzzard food, thank you. Total disdain is the right word. Okay. All right. Anything else about his actions? We're going to flip over and talk about his faith in just a moment, his beliefs, if you will.
They both used something there. They both used, the Philistine used his gods and David his one god. The Philistine cursed
him. Good observation, yes. By his gods, plural.
So they, then David came back with his God.
Yeah.
That's
a great contrast.
Yeah.
And if you were, for the people on the Philistine side, and, you know, basically in that world, the Jews believed in one God. Everybody else believed in, you had to have a God for all occasions. So from their point of view, not only does you got the giant against the kid, you got the giant with the armor bearer against the kid. You got the giant with all the armor and the spear and the sword against the kid with a stick. And it's all of our gods against their god.
Right.
It looks like a total mismatch. Okay? Verse 45. This is now on the back of the sheet. Identify the beliefs. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a javelin. Remember, they were described back earlier in 17 as being huge and heavy and monstrous, okay? But I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. What does that say about what does that reveal about what David believed?
Confidence, faith.
Faith that surpasses understanding.
Okay. Confidence, faith, which passes understanding. It goes beyond the human calculation. I think that's what you're... I'm trying to just say it a different way. Exactly the same thing. Yeah.
It also shows he's not really fighting for or defending Saul. He's fighting for the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's God's the first on display. And even when he talks about the armies of Israel, I mean, when he used the name Israel, that connects back to the promise of God, you know, the people of God. I mean, it's all, you're right, John, it's all about, God's been insulted. That's kind of, if I could condense his thoughts as far as what he's doing, God's been insulted, I'm not putting up with it.
David's respecting God.
God's not going to put up with it. Yes.
David's respecting God, and at the same time, he's criticizing the Philistine for his lack of respect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't you feel that way today in America? That it's not of what evil stuff our government is doing and allowing. It's an insult against God, really.
It is. It is. Mm-hmm. And, and there's many things. And government's one of them, or just the general attitude of people in this culture, in this society. There is no respect for authority. There's no respect for God. No respect for the institutions that God's established.
According to the Word, God has put them all there. That's the baffling part. But then we've seen how Israel had all these warrior kings.
Yeah. Yeah, and this would be off subject, but you know, government was established by God. And one thing you need to think, if there were no government, as bad as we think it is, and it is, it would be far worse if there wasn't government. Go back to the time before the flood, because human government really comes into existence after the flood. He says everything they thought continually was violent and evil, to the point that God says, I'm going to completely wipe out this entire race and start over with one family. I mean, so even at its worst, it is better. There is at least some evil that is held in check.
Mm-hmm. And Christ said, that's in the days of Noah, it's going to be.
Yeah, it seems like we're
married and giving in marriage.
David's probably thinking that his victory over Goliath will show the world that Israel's God is the one.
Ah, you're exactly right. Actually, you just almost quoted verse 47. You almost quoted it.
That's what the teaching is.
Yeah. But let's go to 46 before we go to 47. You want to say something, Jerry?
See, sort of real lack of fear of death, which is what hinders us a lot of things we do, especially in a situation like that.
Yeah.
He was prepared. I think it's, when you're prepared for something, then it's...
Yeah.
Which is, he had faith. You know, it's not just it. It's like fear. There's more to it.
And that's a good point, Jerry. Think of what he's focused on. Mm-hmm. He's focused on God's name, not the situation. He's not focused on the spears and the swords. He's focused on the name of the Lord.
He doesn't fear death because he has faith in God.
Yeah, it's not like self-preservation. He's not focused on himself. Isn't that amazing that he just steps on this battlefield and the only thing he's thinking about is God? I mean, it's like it's very narrow, simple, pure focus. I'm just doing this for God, gang. And I think he probably was shocked that he was so celebrated and treated as a hero and, you know, not feted and all that sort of thing.
That's because his own side didn't believe the same way he did.
Yeah, very much so.
The reason why the Philistines are surrounding them is because of Saul been doing bad things. He's just not been behaving. God's about to teach him a lesson.
Yes.
Maybe not in this case, but
It's part of the ongoing curriculum. Yes,
I have a different take on this.
Take it wherever you want to, Eric.
He quotes the Lord of Hosts, which takes you back to the book of Joshua, where Joshua had this, you know, army that no man could stand against because God was with him. And in those days, all the enemy feared this one God that was different from all the others.
Yes.
Now, here we are several centuries later, and God is in contempt.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because the nations that Joshua was up against, they feared. I mean,
he's saying here, this is still the Lord of Hosts.
Yeah, very good.
You may have touched on this earlier, in an earlier session. The Philistines were in the area now known as Gaza, right?
Yeah, they were more coastal plains and... They would make incursions into the hill country whenever they wanted. Oh, their crops are coming in. I think it's time to pay them a visit. You know, that kind of
people
stuff.
People who are still a problem to Israel.
Yes, yeah. Some things have not changed. Let's get to 46. And I want to get to what you were just about quoting there, 46. This is the day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. Ooh, that's pretty... That's probably a little more violent than we're comfortable with. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth. Now notice what he said. He one-ups them. Goliath said, I'm going to feed your carcass to the critters. David said, I'm going to feed the carcasses of your army to the critters. Which, I mean, there is a battle that ensues afterwards. That all the earth, I guess it was the end of 46, excuse me, guy, I said 47, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord, and he will give you into our hands. All, you know, so he mentions all the earth would know, all the people that are here gathered watching this would know, so the people in 2015 would know that there is a God. And you think, we hit this several times about the world in which we live, where there's precious little respect for God or anything associated with him. But God is not bothered by that. I mean, I'm sure his heart is grieved on some level over evil and the results of it. But I mean, God knows in the end that everybody is going to know that he is God. We don't know when. We have some indications of how, but I'm not sure we've got it all figured out. We don't understand everything.
Every knee shall bow.
Thank you, Brad. Very good. Yeah, every knee will bow, every tongue will confess that Jesus is Lord to the glory of God the Father. So God's, God's being pushed aside and disdained and cursed and all that, God's not worried about that. He knows that it'll be as he wants it to be. Did you want to say something?
No.
Okay. I just thought I saw a thought formulating in your mind.
It is. I don't believe that we're in the minority. I think that...
You think maybe we act like we're in the minority?
Well, I think...
Is that where you're going?
The media puts this forth. But I, of course, I listen to Rush Limbaugh, right?
We can all confess whatever we need to confess. Yeah.
And we need to. First of all, God is God.
Yes.
And I said that last week. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Guys, God is God. God is more powerful than. Anyone out there?
Yeah.
So we shouldn't have any fear, but I don't think that we are in the minority. I think the centers of communication, they try to make it to discourage us, but we can't forget that God is God.
Yeah. Yeah. Good reminder that God is God. Mm-hmm. I don't know who said this. I remember I had a Sunday school teacher as a kid that said this all the time. And I know he was quoting somebody, but he always said, "You and God always make a majority."
Mm-hmm. If the Lord be with us, who can stand against us?
Boy, that is this story, isn't it? It's just David. Mm-hmm. The battle is the Lord; he will give you into our hands. Anything else you want to say about David's belief system? The beliefs you see reflected in his statement.
He must have had a ministering angel with him at some point in time. Because a lot of what he said there seemed to have a lot of credibility as far as, mm-hmm. giving the carcasses of the Philistines the whole army. I mean, how would he even know him to think that?
This isn't a natural faith?
We're speculating, but God certainly has done a work mm-hmm. to bring him to this point, however it was. But you remember, this is the David that was writing Psalms before this ever happened. Some of the Psalms mm-hmm. we're reading... seemed like the shepherd psalm. You assume that probably came about when he was a shepherd.
When was he, in relation to this story, anointed by Samuel?
He was two chapters before.
So
I don't know how much in time.
He was aware of that, too.
Yeah, yeah. God had selected him, and yeah. But the application is this. We need to walk with God, live with God, be in his word, pray, let his spirit control us. So that when our giants come up, we're ready to have that kind of confidence too. But you're right, Willard. This was not a man-generated thing. God somehow had done a great work, whether it was an angelic visitation or divine revelation or Holy Spirit anointing, whatever.
It was almost prophecy.
Well, yeah.
To hear him say it.
Yeah. Yeah, you assume that that was generated by God's spirit somehow. Well, I don't I don't need to worry about spoilers because I think you all know how this story ends, all right? Okay, so this has not ever been in question. Verse 48, and so it was when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, that David hastened and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. I just kind of think they were just like two guys like, running toward each other on the battlefield. That's kind of how I picture it. Of course, it says he hastened and ran toward the army to meet the Philistines. So it's just like, just the kind of thing. It, so you've got to figure 49 happens while David's on the run. So he's firing on the move and hitting a moving target. And David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone, and he slung it and struck the Philistine in the forehead, so that the stone sank into his forehead and he fell on his face to the earth. As my father used to tell me this story when I was a kid, and he fell down dead as a doornail. That's how my dad, for some reason, Dad always included that in his telling of the story.
Did he tell you the next part where he cut his head off?
I don't recall him telling me that as a kid. He probably edited it a little bit for childlike ed. But that
revised Sam version.
Yeah, maybe so, yeah. But I just remember that, dead as a doornail, and somehow that was his, you know, his little flourish on.
I demonstrated that for the kids once.
You did?
Yeah. Jerry's the only one who was there at the Awana class. Okay. It was the kickoff of the second year we were having Awanas, and we told this story, and I got out an egg. And I said, this is what it would have meant to sink into his forehead, and I crushed the egg.
That's pretty graphic.
And the yolk went up on the ceiling.
It's probably still there.
A couple of the women who were sitting over in the front. No, they got it on them.
Oh, we won't reenact that laugh today. We'll take
Jerry, were you there for that one?
You had egg on your face, obviously.
No, I didn't get any on me.
All right. We're about out of time, but I want to finish, make sure we read the scriptures. So, verse 50. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone and struck the Philistine and killed him. But there's no sword in the hand of David. Therefore, David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword, drew it out of his sheath, and killed him. So it says twice he killed him, and sometimes that's used as, well, the Bible doesn't know what it's talking about. Well, I mean, we're describing about, you know, when was he pronounced clinically dead? Does it matter? He wound up dead, okay? I don't. He had a fatal wound, and before he took his last breath, he got his head chopped off.
People ask that question, would it grow up to be quarters, okay?
Yeah, okay.
Was it the rock or was it the sword to kill him?
Yes. Go ahead and say it again. Say that'll...
The insult is that David used the Philistine sword, and he didn't have one.
Yeah, he kills him with his own, I mean, cuts off his head with his own sword. Mm-hmm. By the way, this might be an interesting Bible study for you. It says later that David, the head went wherever it went, I forget.
Took it to town.
To Jerusalem, but the armor stayed with David.
In the tent.
And if you want to, you can track that armor. It has another use later
on. He's going
to
use it again.
But anyway, verse 51. Then David ran, stood over the Philistine, took his sword, and drew it out of his sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. And when the Philistines saw the champion was dead, they fled. And suddenly everybody else gets a backbone. That's my commentary. That's not the text. Okay. Now the men of Israel and Judah rose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as the entrance of the valley into the gates of Ekron, and wounded the Philistine, and the wounded of the Philistines fell on the road to Shearim, as far as Gath and Ekron. And the children of Israel returned from chasing the Philistines, and they plundered their tents. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, and he put his armor in his tent. I'm going to skip the next question there about where would we be if David had been all faith and no action, or all action, no faith. I think we've covered that.
The quote that I use a lot to myself is, we can't do what God does, but God won't do what we have to do. He won't do our part.
Yeah, he wants to use us. He wants us to be active. Yeah.
We can't do God's part. God won't do our part.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's a great way of saying it, Bill. Yeah.
It's an interesting reaction by the Philistines, too. Just one kid killing somebody with a stone, you had to be afraid of God or what David
did. Oh, we lost one guy. There's still an army here, guys. Let's get our act together and go kill some Israelites, you know. But you're right. What David said prophetically really came to me. Everyone will know. This was God against gods, okay, as much as anything else.
And what I see is people without God, when the crisis happens, they fall apart.
Yes. And when we don't have our focus on God as believers, we'll fall apart too. Yeah, same truth. Bringing it home, we've already talked about this, but let me just cover it. As hard as it is to resolve the ways in which God works, he's always able to combine his work, in which we believe, with our actions, I should have put there, which are led by him, or should be led by him, who accomplishes his will. It is this... this divine human combination that only God can pull off. Bottom line, when we assume the responsibility to act while at the same time trusting fully in his promises and work, victory will be the result. The great thing is, with all the giants that are around us, we have ample opportunity to put that into play every day. So, all right, David and Goliath.
After last week's first part of this, mm-hmm. I went home and I read, it's been a while,
mm-hmm.
I read it, and I shared it with my wife and my son. And we just had a great discussion, so I would encourage people to share this.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that.